Neely, they blitzed all three linebackers and I got nailed the line. We had to burn our last time out. Amos, did you think about a field goal? Neely, yeah, but Scobie had a weak leg. Accurate but weak. Paul, plus he hadn't kicked a field goal all year. Silo, the kicking game was not our strongest suit. Nat, thanks, Silo. I can always count on you. The final play of the Miracle Drive was perhaps the most famous in all of the glorious history of Spartan football. With no timeouts, 20 yards to go, 18 seconds left, Neely sent two receivers wide and took the snap in the shotgun. He quickly handed off to Marcus Mabry on a draw. Marcus took three steps, then abruptly stopped and pitched the ball back to Neely, who sprinted to his right, pumping the ball as if he would finally throw it. When he turned upfield, the offensive line released and sprinted forward, looking for someone to level. At the 10, Neely, running like a madman, lowered his head and crashed into a linebacker and a safety, a collision that would have knocked out a mere mortal. He spun away, free but dizzy, legs still churning, got hit again at the 5 and again at the 3, where most of the East Pike defense managed to corral him. The play was almost over, as was the game, when Silo Mooney and Barry Vetrano slammed into the mass of humanity hanging on Neely, and the entire pile fell into the end zone. Neely sprang to his feet, still clutching the ball, and looked directly at Eddie Rake, 20 feet away, motionless and noncommittal. Neely, for a split second, I thought about spiking the ball at him, but then Silo flung me down and everybody piled on. Nat, the whole team was down there, along with the cheerleaders, the trainers, half the band. Got 15 yards for excessive celebrating. John Couch, nobody cared. I remember looking at Rake and the coaches, and they didn't move. Talk about weird. Neely, I was lying in the end zone, getting crushed by my teammates, telling myself that we'd just done the impossible. Randy, I was 12 years old, and I remember all the Messina fans were just sitting there, stunned, exhausted, a lot of them crying. Blanchard, the folks from East Pike were crying too. Randy, they ran one play, didn't they, after the kickoff? Paul, yeah, Donnie Blitzen nailed the quarterback. The game was over. Randy, all of a sudden, every player with the green jersey was sprinting off the field. No handshakes, no post-game huddle, just a mad rush to get to the locker room. The entire team vanished. Mal, we thought y'all had gone crazy. We waited for a spell, thinking you had to come back and get the trophy and all. Paul, we weren't coming out. They sent someone to retrieve us for the ceremony, but we kept the door locked. John Couch, those poor kids from East Pike tried to smile when they got the runner-up trophy, but they were still in shock. Blanchard, Rake had vanished too. Somehow they got Rabbit to walk out to midfield and accept the championship trophy. It was very strange, but we were too excited to care. Mal walked up to Silo's cooler and pulled out a beer. Help yourself there, Sheriff, Silo said. I'm off duty. He took a long sip and began walking down the steps. Funeral's Friday, boys, at noon. Where? Here. Where else? Thursday. Neely and Paul met early Thursday morning in the rear of the bookstore, where Nat brewed another pot of his highly addictive and probably illegal Guatemalan coffee. Nat had business up front, near the tiny and semi-hidden occult section, with a sinister-looking woman who had pale skin and jet-black hair. The town witch, Paul said somewhat proudly, as if every town needed a witch, and very softly, as if she might fling a curse their way. The sheriff arrived a few minutes after 8, fully uniformed and heavily armed and looking quite lost, in the only bookstore in the county, and one owned by a homosexual at that. Had Nat not been a former Spartan, Mel would have probably had him under surveillance as a suspicious character. You boys ready? He growled, obviously anxious to leave. With Neely in the front seat and Paul in the back, they sped away from downtown in a long white Ford with bold lettering along the doors, announcing that the car was the property of the sheriff. On the main highway, Mal pushed the accelerator and flipped a switch turning on the flashing red and blue lights. No sirens, though. Once everything was properly configured, he cocked his weight to one side, picked up his tall styrofoam cup of coffee, and laid a limp wrist over the top of the wheel. They were doing 100 miles an hour. I was in Vietnam, Mal announced, selecting the topic and giving the impression that he might talk nonstop for the next 2 hours. Paul sank a few inches in the rear seat, like a real criminal on the way to a court hearing. Neely watched the traffic, certain they were about to be slaughtered in some gruesome two-lane pileup. I was on a PBR on the Bassac River. A loud slurp of the coffee as the setting was established. There were six of us on this stupid little boat about twice the size of a nice bass rig, and our job was to patrol up and down the river and make trouble. Anything that moved, we shot it. We were idiots. A cow gets too close, target practice. A nosy rice farmer raises his head up from a rice paddy, we'd start firing just to watch him hit the mud. Our mission each day had no tactical purpose whatsoever, so we drank beer, smoked pot, played cards, tried to entice the local girls to go boating with us. I'm sure this is going somewhere, Paul said from the rear. Shut up and listen. One day we're half asleep. It's hot. We're sunbathing, napping like a bunch of turtles on a log, when suddenly all hell breaks loose. We're taking fire from both sides of the river. Heavy fire, an ambush. Two guys were below. I'm on the deck with three others, all of whom get hit immediately, dead, shot before they got their guns. Blood flying through the air, everybody's screaming. I'm flat on my stomach, unable to move, when a fuel barrel gets hit. Damn thing wasn't supposed to be on the deck, but what did we care? We were invincible because we were 18 and stupid. Thing explodes. I managed to dive in the river without getting burned. I swim up beside the boat and grab a piece of the camouflage net that's hanging over the side. I hear my two buddies screaming inside the boat. They're trapped. Smoke and fire everywhere. No way out. I stay underwater as long as I can. Whenever I pop up for air, the gooks spray gunfire all around me. Heavy gunfire. They know I'm in the water holding my breath. This goes on for a long time while the boat burns and drifts with the current. The screaming and coughing finally stops in the cabin. Everybody's dead but me.